But now I don't see those cobbles and curbs. I don't hear the blues anymore.
Rough Trade is giving away a third of the first 3 months of the Rough Trade Club plus new music membership exclusively to 101 Part-Time Jobs listeners. Become a member of Rough Trade Club New Music and you'll receive the Rough Trade Album of the Month straight to your door every month on exclusive vinyl pressing with exclusive bonus material. Club members have received exclusive pressings of albums from Sufjan Stevens, Sprints, The Last Dinner Party, Julie Byrne and Over Mono, just to name a few, this past year alone. Sign up using the promo code CLUB101POD and you'll get the Rough Trade Album of the Month, English Teacher's excellent debut album, This Could Be Texas, on exclusive Galaxy Gold for a third of the usual price. Here's English Teacher on a recent episode of 101.
How many opportunities do you get to write a debut album and have all of this, you know, support behind us? I don't know, I really like the idea of holding the bar as being like classic songs.
You only get one shot at a debut.
Don't want the album of the month but still want all the benefits? Sign up to the standard tier using Club101Pod and you'll still get the first month free. You'll also get free shipping on all orders, 10% off the bar and on secondhand vinyl in-store, and exclusive access to sold-out Rough Trade events. So don't hang around. Go to roughtrade.com/club and sign up with the code CLUB101POD. That's CLUB101POD, and claim money off the album of the month, English Teacher's This Could Be Texas, today. This offer's available to UK residents only. Do you play in bands? I did for the longest time. And I wish that I knew that DistroKid was a thing. I don't even think it existed back then. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy with unlimited uploads, and artists keep 100% of your royalties and earnings. 1 million+ artists rely on DistroKid to get their music on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram, and all the major streaming services. When you get DistroKid, you can see a DistroKid bank and withdraw your earnings. You get notified when you've earned royalties and you can withdraw via the app. And you can even check your streaming stats on Spotify and Apple. Get 30% off your first year on DistroKid by going to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod. 30% off for your first year. That's not bad. We know it's a tough world out there. Why don't you make it easier for yourself? And to get 30% off that free year as an artist, where you get 100% of your royalties and earnings, go to distrokid.com/VIP/101pod. All right, stay with me. I'll be right back after this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
God reached his hand down from the sky. He was a booking agent and offered him travel. He said he owes for rehearsal and get some new gear. Remember that no one can pay rent this year. So hurry up and wait and practice your chords. The DWP will want to see your workings. 100 run, part-time jobs. 100 run, part-time jobs.
Hello, welcome to 101 Part-Time Jobs, the podcast where I speak to bands and artists about sex, drugs, and being on the dole. Today we've got Owen Williams from The Tubs, whose new album Dead Meat is pretty damn great. Owen's in plenty of other bands. There's a near comprehensive list in this chat, most of which can be traced back to Joanna Gruesome, their band when they were in Cardiff. And there are some brilliant bands that have offshooted from that, making records and playing today. Sniffney and the Knits, X Void, the GN band, Soup, S-U-E-P, whose new album Sharp is really, really good. You can go down that rabbit hole pretty quickly, pretty easily. There's a lot of stuff to discover there.
Cheers for listening to 101 Part-Time Jobs. Had loads of great episodes recently. Cheers for keeping up with it. Got some more in the can to go. The podcast is supported by 2000 Trees Festival, which is a great rock and punk and emo festival down in Cheltenham, just a couple of hours away from London on the train. They've made some great announcements in the last few weeks. Frank Hart and the Rattlesnakes is headlining with Bullet for My Valentine, 100 Reasons, American Football, Rival Schools, Bob Villain, The Bronx, Kneecap, Joyce Manor, Microwave, Sprint. Loads of brilliant bands at 2000 Trees this year. If you know you want to go but you haven't got your ticket yet, you can use the voucher code 101POD and get 20 quid straight off that ticket. That's 20 quid that you can spend on a breakfast sarnie, a cup of coffee, a boozy coffee at 9 a.m, a pack of ciggies, four pack of lagers. 20 quid can get you pretty far. If you know you want to go anyway, get your ticket, 2000trees.co.uk with the voucher code 101POD. All right, here's Owen from the Tubs and dozens of other bands on 101 Part-Time Jobs. Go well. Cheers!
You get to a particular point, and I think maybe up until that point, you've been in a like a family or kind of like a community where you can go to school.
Yeah.
And you know, and you get like 10 quid on the weekend, and you can spend time doing band practice, and then at some point there's like crunch time.
Yeah. Like the sort of floor falls out from beneath you, and you're trying to scramble. Which is what I've been doing for like maybe 10 years now or something.
When was the first time?
Yes, leaving university and not having a student loan, I suppose, is when it happened. But when we got a nice buffer, because the band Jonah Grusin that we were in took off like as around that time. So we had a few years of, you know, actually kind of basically making a living. And then that band stopped. So we were like maybe 25.
Yeah.
And, you know, suddenly having to like look for like a bar job or whatever, and feeling like washed up musicians, which is kind of funny to think about in retrospect. So it sort of ended. And I mean, I've never actually had any interest in like pursuing a salaried job. And I didn't then. But I think what's slightly different was that after that band ended, I was like determined to kind of recreate that situation again, and like, you know, get back to a point where we were kind of like, you know, making money and touring without having to get a job. And I've kind of learned over time that that's like actually like an impossible thing to keep doing for like, impossible in the sense that you can do it for like a few years. Unless you could become huge, I suppose. Mm. You can have a few years of like doing it, but eventually like you have to kind of, it's just precarious, isn't it?
Really? Yeah.
Like you can't keep it going for more than a few years before that the band gets forgotten about. So now I'm a bit more like aware that I have to like hustle to make money, and that's fine. It's like you kind of factor that into your decisions, and it doesn't feel like a failure.
I think a lot of people, and like myself included, not playing a band but doing something creative like this, in that sort of sense, but I'm having to unlearn a lot of things that I was taught at different points in my life, which is to look for someone else to look after the situation,
right,
and strategize, kind of be in charge, because you're your own boss.
And like the problem is I've always been so like disorganized, right. So I'm like,
Think you'd be the opposite, right? I mean,
so
you're in 15 bands.
Yeah, you'd think so, but it just, you know, like my life's kind of chaos. And I mean I like work hard, I suppose, you know, like I get very obsessed with like what producing stuff and like absorbed in the like making of it. So I have like a high, maybe like productivity rate,
yeah,
but like low, very like poor, like organizational skills or like practical skills. I don't have any common sense.
Well, without sounding like, you know, a supportive family member, that's what makes you special.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like annoying for people though. I mean, and like, it's probably quite a frustrating thing to be around, but yeah, I can just romanticize it, so it's fine. You know,
that's
I'm an artiste, so
I often think, you know, the greatest things I think about in, you know, if I have like a moment of like, if I have a good thought, if I'm walking through the park, I'm having the morning coffee, or you have that little magic, usually that comes from a creative place or what someone else has made. And like, that's the important stuff.
Yeah, I think so. But I mean, I think I've kind of like, I have a bit of an extreme, I prioritize that stuff to like an extreme degree in a way.
Has that put you in trouble?
Yeah, like financially for sure. And like probably like interpersonally with my like, I don't know why I use that word. That's like a sort of jargon word.
But,
in relationships and stuff, you know, it's like I can get so, because I'm kind of like, I think because I'm kind of like, have an obsessive mind and I have like sort of OCD and stuff like that. So I can get these quite positive obsessions where like, you know, I'm obsessed with like, for instance, like creating those kind of moments that you were talking about, you know, doing stuff that's meaningful, which I think is generally a good kind of like principle, like a purpose. But I just seem to like do it to the expense of like my like, you know, health and finances and maybe mental health to a degree. So I mean, I don't have a very good sense of balance, maybe.
That's something that we hear a lot more about in interviews and in sort of longer features about the sort of, it's not even knock-on effect, it's the direct effect of prioritizing going on tour for your health, like all kinds of health, just mental and physical. Have you been able to like reflect on that much over the years, given that you've been doing this for like a decade?
Well, I mean, yeah, what I've kind of learned, I suppose, is that it's partly the way, because I was brought up by parents who were sort of doing the same kind of thing. They were like writers and my mum was a musician. And so to me, there's not this kind of like inner conflict about, you know, pursuing something as precarious or as like, you know, non-lucrative as art.
Yeah.
Because that's what I saw them hustling to do that. So whereas I think other people, I think there's more maybe like a sense of guilt or shame, especially if their parents are being like, what the hell are you doing all the time? Where I just don't have that, which for better or for worse, I suppose, you know.
You know, I think we're all susceptible of, if people around us, if our direct people that we were around were saying, why are you doing this all the time? You'd start believing them.
Yeah, and I think we've got, especially all my friends, cause in this sort of network of bands that we're all part of, we've sort of like put ourselves in a bubble where we like don't really ever associate with anyone who would like make us feel like losers. Or, you know, so it's like, it's just like it's like an echo chamber. Like, we don't even allow it in, really.
You're like a positive gang.
Yeah, exactly. A positive gang who are like all on the dole.
Do you talk to each other about this? I mean, you must do, right? Do you have these conversations?
Yeah, like, you know, like, so it's not like we're like completely like, you know, secure about it. Like, sometimes, like, especially when you have to do like humiliating jobs and stuff, and we don't earn money, and like, you know, there's all the humiliations that like brings, we do get a bit dispirited. But then something like, you know, like this Tubbs album that we just released has gone like incredibly well, and so now we're like, we don't give a shit anymore. You know, we're like, we're rocking out again.
I imagine this must be really hard. You know, you're working the whole time to rehearse and write these songs, which doesn't take any short amount of time.
I think in terms of writing songs, to me, like, it doesn't take any time, really. I just do it in like 10 minutes and I'm like, oh, there's a song. And then like a week later, I'll be like, oh, there's another song.
Brilliant.
That's fine. It's like the practicing and the like actual like logistics of being a band, which, yeah, can be very difficult to sort of sync up with work. So I just have all these kind of casual jobs where I like leave for like a few weeks and then come back. But, you know, if you get sick or if you like, if I'm going a bit crazy or something, then everything falls apart. Do you know what I mean? I have a safety net in the sense, like, you know, I like can borrow some money off my dad sometimes and stuff like that. So I'm not in like I've got a certain amount of privilege that allows me to like, you know, do kind of get by. But generally, my life is just sort of like quite chaotic for those reasons, I think. Yeah.
I love that you write songs so quickly. I mean, how handy is that?
Easy, man. It's just easy. I'm joking.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, but that kind of, is it a muscle memory thing?
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing it like
to me, it's just like a fun, it's like playing like how people feel when they like play video games or something. Like if I'm just like bored, I'll just sit down and be like, I'll just think of a melody that's been going around in my head, and then I'll be like, then maybe I'll like nick a melody from another song and be like, I'll put that under some different chords, and you just kind of have fun with it. But yeah, because I've been doing it so regularly for like, what, maybe like 20 years, it's like, no, like not that long, like 15 years, then it, yeah, to me it's pretty easy. Like, but I also write fiction, and that is work. That's like hours of drafting and redrafting and stuff.
Novels?
Yeah, so I've written, I've only been doing it for like 4 or 5 years, but I've had a few things published, but I like, it's a bit definitely less of a sort of like, you know, there's less of a goer maybe than the music, because people tend to prefer music.
Well, and it's instant.
So I just bashed out all these tub songs, and I was like, yeah, I was proud of it. We took like a few weeks to make the album, and then suddenly it's like, you know, on Pitchfork, and like it's getting loads of people hearing it, and it's just such an easy thing to kind of like transmit to people. Mm. Whereas I spent like fucking like 3 years writing this book. I'm like, no one wants to read a novel anyway, so it's just like whatever.
I mean, do you find it funny that, you know, you could make lots of records with the numerous of other bands? Yeah. And I'd love to list them, but I'd be in fear that I'm leaving someone out.
You can try if you want.
I mean, do you know what?
I might leave them out.
I've got them written down, actually. My friend Trev helps me with this. This is a potentially non-exhaustive list.
Yeah, I know Trev.
Brilliant guy. Okay, we got Joanna Gruesome, Sniffney and the Knits, Tubbs, X-Void, Saturday's Kids.
No, but I played in them for like a show maybe, but they're friends.
If you played a show with them, I think that counts.
I'd say I'm definitely the sixth member. The fifth member? I can't remember how many there were.
Grubbs, Evariste Galois.
Galois. I don't know why it was called that, but
French.
It was like after a French, this is our teenage band, like it's kind of all right. It sounded like Dinosaur Jr. or something.
Before
Joanna Gruesome, when we're literally like 15 or 16.
Brilliant.
Evariste Galois. Matt, who's in the Tubbs and Sniffing the Knits, like just like pretentiously named after a French mathematician, the way you do when you're 15.
Was it written on any backpacks?
I don't think so. I don't know. Maybe we had a patch or something. I don't know.
Garden Centre. King of Cats.
King of Cats.
And the Snivellers.
The Snivellers, yes.
I've never listened to the Snivellers.
The Snivellers were like a good band, I think, because it was Max Levy who played like the kind of, this role of like a kind of, you know, like a sort of scheming, snivelling manservant. You know, like the guy in Lord of the Rings, he's always like whispering into the old king's ear.
Yeah, lots of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, kind of very, like, you know, like backing slowly out into out of his master's chambers.
Almost like the whisperer to the hand.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and he's got kind of a mixture of like snivelling and like pathetic and like, but like scheming. And yeah, and so I thought it was a strong concept for a punk band. But yeah, we just didn't, for many reasons, we couldn't keep it together.
What struck me about Garden Centre and King of Cats especially, but then it kind of made sense to me when I realised they were shared members of Joanna Gruesome, is that you have made this world of your own. It's not like, I mean, to me, growing up in bands that wanted to sound like Against Me and Hot Water Music,
yeah,
and did that,
yeah.
Like, to some like kind of varying degrees. Mm. It feels like you've created your own world. Like, you know, you've been artists. You've been able to let your imagination go free.
Yeah, and I mean, and I think it's mainly just because we're all friends. You know, we've like there's quite a close knit group of friends. Maybe there's about 10 of us who've, you know, known each other for like all of our 20s, and we just kind of like try out different combinations. I mean, we need a name for it, maybe. Like, people call it the Joanna Gruesome Extended Universe, but I think that's unfair because a lot of, you know, people weren't in Joanna Gruesome. So I was saying the other day we need like a name for our little collective.
I like the George Nichols band, the GN band.
The GN band, yeah. I'm in that as well, actually. I forget, yeah.
They're
like,
so good. Who plays guitar?
It's George writes all the parts. He's the guitarist in the Tubbs. He's a real like, sort of, shredding kind of Spanish guitar vibe.
So have you been able to like bounce off each other and kind of have I think you know, if you're like a solo folk songwriter and you were living in London or any other expensive city or probably anywhere really, you probably feel quite alone. Do you think that having friends and close friends and bandmates that kind of bounce off each other, have you ever had any moments where like one of you's nearly like defected and thought, I'm going to get a full-time job?
I mean, sort of have. Well, I mean, our drummer X-Void has just done that. But, you know, it's like...
It's a personal choice.
It's a personal choice. Of course. Of course. And, yeah, I think mostly we're, like, all in the same boat. And, yeah, you do sort of prop each other up, especially during the particularly, like, the bleaker times, you know? Mm. Yeah, I guess it's like... It'll be interesting seeing when you go into your 30s. It comes even dicier then, I think. So,
well, before we...
We're all about 30, roundabout. Yeah. On the cusp of it, so...
I almost wonder if that's a better age to do it, because I think 30s at that point where, you know, you've chosen your identity a bit more than maybe 25.
And you sort of know the lay of the land a bit. You know that, like, think how precarious things are. And... When you're in your 20s, you're a bit sort of clueless, I think. So I think yeah, and I do think bands, like, I think you do need like to have like a high sort of like tolerance for like humiliation and stuff though, because like I go to a party occasionally with like some old friends and stuff, and there'll be people who are like doing, you know, earning like big bucks and often doing things that are very like, you know, noble, like, you know, working like jobs which you're actually helping people with, like, and there's lots like people like that I remember from school and stuff or from my 20s that have like high status and stuff and quite nice flats, and so sometimes you're like, oh shit, well, I earn like barely any money, and my job at the moment is like, I've just got this thing that Max Levy does as well, it's called working for this company called Click Intelligence.
All right.
Where you, it's like an SEO company, and so you write these like clickbait articles, which are like, so the one I wrote yesterday was something like, 5 Greek island hideaways you need to visit.
So you're a copywriter?
Well, yeah, but it's basically, they're like sham articles that go on like a sham news site. And you're not actually, and these brands pay them to like create like, you know, like neutral articles, which happen to mention these brands, so it kind of like circumvents the Google search like rule.
So the general idea is the more times that word or that brand name is on different websites across the internet, the more likely it is to be a...
It's like a promotional like piece for a brand. It won't go up the search results.
I see.
But this company basically... like specializes in creating like, you know, quote unquote journalism that happens to mention brands.
It's Trojan horse.
Yeah,
SEO.
Exactly. And like that's what I'm doing at the moment. And it's like when someone's like, oh, you know, I work for like in Parliament or some shit, I'm just like, yeah, that's what I'm doing for work. But then, you know, apart from that, I do like bar work in the Barbican Centre.
Oh yeah.
I've been an invigilator in the Barbican for like, in like an art gallery invigilator for like 6 years.
What does an invigilator at an art gallery do? I mean, invigilator at school exams.
Yeah, right? So basically you're just standing around in the gallery. I mean, like supposedly you're supposed to be there to like give information about the work. No one ever asks you about that. And I think, so, and the other thing you're supposed to be doing is protecting the artwork. But if someone did, you know, try an art heist or something, you'd be like, you had to call security. Like, you're not even allowed to, like, intervene if anyone's, like, throwing, like, tomato soup on the Van Gogh or whatever. So it's like, you're just like, there is, like, an insurance stipulation, I think.
That's really funny.
So, but it's funny because it's like, yeah, these jobs, I'm just doing, I get a weird pleasure out of doing, like, some of the, like, most meaningless jobs.
Barbican Centre's pretty incredible cultural.
I mean it's a great place to be, and it's actually nice being around like lots of people who are like in very similar sort of situations. Like you can get like, I've met loads of like, you know, people from quite big bands and stuff who like work there, or like people who are like actors who are doing quite well, and it's just funny, like you see all these people who are like basically like successful in their field or what, you know, and we're all just doing these stupid jobs.
That's what we're here for.
Exactly.
That's the thing.
part-time jobs, 101. Part-time jobs, 101. Part-time jobs, 101. Part-time jobs.
The contrast is quite funny, you know, so it's like, we'll be like, we'll go and play a festival in America or whatever, and you know, or like in Europe, and you'll get like a buffet full of like expensive cheeses and stuff. And then like the next week I'm back doing my clickbait or like pouring pints for like, you know, and it's just, I mean, it's kind of funny. Like, I mean, it's kind of sad, but it's funny as well.
It's interesting, you know, lots of authors traditionally, I mean, Down and Out in Paris and London is kind of something I think about a lot.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, sure, that's like before like the world's most famous writer or one of them. Yeah. But there's that element of the struggling artist, which I think is...
It's like less romantic, or what I suppose, isn't it? Like, you know, you can't like romanticize going and like writing clickbait. Like, but I don't know. I mean, in a way, like, I do think these like the gig economy and like these like 0 hours sort of jobs are like... I like, they actually like the only kinds of jobs that suit being in a band, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, if those jobs didn't exist, I'd just be like constantly like taking kind of salary jobs or like jobs where you're locked into a contract and then having to give up and find new jobs.
Yeah.
So actually it does work kind of well, but you just get zero security and no sick pay or like, you know, so
yeah,
it's a bit of a catch 22. Because in a way, I'm quite glad that those sort of jobs exist. I think they suck for people who are like, that's their only job and that's the only thing they're doing. But I don't know, really.
It makes me think that if you play in a band or you're an artist, doesn't have to be music, can be visual art or any kind of art, naturally part of your MO or part of your remit is coming up with imaginary, like kind of original ways to do your shit.
Yeah.
And that's part of it, right?
Yeah. Well, my friend Max, who does the clickbait job, he has the best imagination for getting like ridiculous jobs. So like what has he done? He used to drive like a tiny train on like across the seafront in Brighton.
Yeah, I know the one.
He like worked on like a dockland, like with tiny ships. He's a really small guy. So it always suits him.
Gets into small places.
Yeah. And he like operated the spotlight at like a burlesque bar. So his kind of MO is just like finding the most like ridiculous jobs you can find. And so that's quite inspirational for me. That's the thing I get a bit guilty about sometimes. I'm just like, I've kind of pursued quite like, not egotistical things, but things that are quite like, perhaps a bit selfish, but I don't know.
It's a hard conversation.
I don't even question it though, do you know what I mean? I've just always just done it and I haven't really like thought about it.
No question.
Especially when you're in so many bands, you don't even have time to like think about it. Yeah. You're just sort of like, oh, another band practice tonight and then gig tomorrow, blah, blah, blah. So sometimes like, yeah, I don't know, mental health takes over and those are the times where I start dropping stuff.
Okay.
Because I'm spinning so many plates.
Yeah.
And sometimes, and I think because I like can be a bit like, yeah, like chaotic, and I just occasionally everything like falls apart. But sometimes it gets so bad that it's just like, you just have to ride it out a bit.
Just goes to shit and you have to like let time do its thing.
Yeah. But then I've been pretty good at like, it's almost like my brain knows that like when I have downtime, it can go crazy for a bit. Do you know what I mean? Like there's not many times where I've like had to cancel a tour or anything because I've been like, you know, like feeling crazy. But it's like schedules in a little breakdown.
Yeah. I just started therapy again and I did the second one just this morning. Mm. And I think with therapy, I think if anyone who's ever had any kind of problem, big or small, like obviously it's going to help. I think it's kind of...
I started seeing a new therapist recently and I just like showed up an hour late. So it's like, I was like, fucking hell, man.
I mean, that's one answer they haven't been able to give me a solution for is when I have downtime or even if you have half an hour between things, just to sit down here on my couch, just brain goes, you know, I start thinking about something that makes me feel bad.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to tell like if like them playing music and stuff, like I think it does help it in like an existential way, but I think on like in terms of like day-to-day anxiety it can be pretty like rough on that stuff, you know.
So you've had a life of part-time jobs?
Yeah, pretty much.
Have any of them been specifically quite good in giving you ideas or kind of encouraging your imagination.
Yeah, well, so like the invigilation one, which is like the art gallery thing that I've done for the longest, is pretty good because it's a job, but it's like it's also nothing. So you have all this space, and sometimes that can be filled by like anxiety. But sometimes I like written songs just like hanging around the gallery and like tapping on my knee or whatever and being like, you know, make like trying to write stuff. And you know, all of like fiction, I've like, you know, just I've been like secretly on my phone. And I have hopefully no one at the job hears this, but I have like a secret like earpiece that I use to stream like audiobooks and podcasts. And
when you say secret, is it translucent?
It's kind of like a spy. It's like flesh-colored little spy like Bluetooth thing. That, like, and I just put my hair over the. But yeah, if my managers are listening, like that's I'm just saying this to seem cool. I don't actually do that.
That's brilliant. I mean, you know, I've had quite a few jobs in my time where that I will like feel. But I had one like chopping wood in Devon when I was living at my mum's for a year. And I just felt, I couldn't really explain, I felt very sad. And it was like, that encouraged my anxiety.
Yeah.
I don't think it did much good.
Yeah, it's hard to tell, like, because, I mean, sometimes, like, the routine does help, but...
Mm. Do you have a routine?
Not really at the moment. Like, I was in quite a good one in lockdown, where I would just write for, like, 4 hours and then go for a walk. And then, so I guess doing these things were sort of, like, you know, self-employed or whatever, you kind of, you have to like, you know, really sort of create your own routine.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm better at that than others. Like my dad, he's a writer, and he's got a really solid routine. You know, he's very, and that really helps. But yeah, sometimes I find it kind of difficult.
I think it's hard if you're not a massively early riser. I think if you're an early riser, I think that can help the routine because you've just got more hours in the day.
And over like over Christmas and stuff, I was like, I had loads of problems with my sleep. So that just threw everything into like complete chaos.
But do you read much? Do you watch many films? Do you get like ideas or do you watch things that you've kind of identified as things that make you feel good basically and kind of help the
song. The problem is, right, like my taste, especially in like fiction, my taste and the stuff I write is so like horrible. And bleak, like kind of funny maybe, but like just like my taste can be like so morbid sometimes. It's like I'm just like punishing myself by like reading this shit.
I mean, a lot of bands you're in sound happy,
yeah,
and might have sad lyrics.
Yeah, I mean, with X Void, like the lyrics are kind of just like pop lyrics. In the Tubs, I suppose they've been described as dour in Pitchfork. And I didn't think of them as that, but yeah. I mean,
of the lyrics that I noticed from X Void, you know, there's a lot of like relationship stuff in there.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, but I suppose I'm always like writing from like, you know, those kind of like aesthetically from like a pop kind of tradition of like quite surface level.
Are you interested in lyrics that, you know, something so specific, like I was here drinking from my West Kent Badger Group mug?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes in the Tubs I'll be a bit more specific in that way. And I probably do write a bit more like in a literary way, perhaps. But often it's like, because the melodies I write are quite like rigid, like if I have a hook, it, you know, like saying, what is this, West Kent Badger Group? Those are like terrible like words to try and
they're
fit into
very nice phonetically.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's like I just get a bit frustrated with trying to write good lyrics that like rhyme and that like fit into these quite like, you know, like rigid hooks. And that's, but I'm getting better at it because in Jonah Gruesome, the lyrics meant nothing at all. Like
really?
They were like nonsense. Like occasionally I would, it'd be like if I was being like generous.
You wrote a good. I wrote all,
yeah. Like, well, Alan would write the shouty lyrics, which tended to make sense. And mine, the melodic lyrics were just like, yeah, like a collage of images or whatever, but actually just absolute nonsense. And that's why, and the vocals were so low in the mix that you couldn't even tell what you're saying. Which I guess is kind of like My Bloody Valentine maybe or something like that, where it's like, it's more like the voice is like an instrument than like a...
Yeah.
Like...
So we're now trying to actually write lyrics.
Isn't it funny how if you like a band, if you really like a record, those lyrics, they can kind of, they could be anything, but you still believe in them.
They still
kind of become your like scripture.
I mean, people just take what they want from it, I suppose. So I try not to like point out that it doesn't mean anything.
<you are.
laughs> Apart from that. Okay, I've got a good one. So there was, we were working, me and Max Levy, we were working in, for this job where you were basically like, it was like a call center job in Brighton. And your role was to kind of like trick like people in America. You just basically kind of like trick receptionists into giving you like the details of like business people. So we were just doing this stupid job. But on the same day, we both got fired. Because I just left and went to Weatherspoons. And then we came back, like, after just, like, getting a bit pissed in the middle of the day. And then we were both... our manager came over while we were crowding around, like, the computer looking at pictures of motorbikes. Like, after, like, four pints. And then me and Max got fired.
And what was getting fired like?
I don't even
like.
Know why. We weren't even interested in motorbikes. But we were just like, he was just showing me these like different pictures of motorbikes while we were like drunk in the middle of the day.
And do you remember what they said? Do you remember like the feeling? Was it like the air got sucked out of the room when he came in? What was the feeling?
The feeling was just like, well, I felt a mixture of like, yeah, that feeling of like anxious, but also kind of happy.
Really?
That we were finally getting fired.
Brilliant. Do you remember walking out that door?
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, and again, like a mixed feeling of like elation and fear.
Great, love it. Thanks so much, Owen.
So there was Owen Williams here on 101 Part-Time Jobs. The Tubs' new album, Dead Meat, is out now. Go and listen to them and all the bands the members share. There's a lot to be enjoyed. Thanks to Josh from Memorials of Distinction for setting this up. And thanks to you for listening. See you next week for some new episodes. Here's Cox Barra. I've been working all day, bumming mate on the side, running around like a blue ass fly. I've been working, yeah, I've been working all day, bumming mate. Every bleeding minute I've been on the go, up and down the ladder like a fiddler's elbow. I've been working, yeah, I've been working all day, bumming mate. This is a Mighty Moon Media podcast.